What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. Walk through York, Pennsylvania, and you'll find several elements of a strong town, including the historic downtown where residents gather, and a local government investing in its homegrown entrepreneurs. But as we see repeated in cities and towns across the country, you'll also find low-income neighborhoods that receive minimal investment. You've seen it before, perhaps in your own community, the busted sidewalks, the broken streetlights, and the lack of neighborhood services. That's why in 2017, York residents and this episode's guest, Salvador, aka Sal Galdamez, created York XL, a nonprofit organization that brings people together to imagine and then passionately create empowered neighborhoods. Attend a York XL event and you'll find, as we like to call that Strongtowns, a bottom-up revolution. A revolution that embraces the priorities of the neighborhoods in which they work and uses those priorities to make meaningful investments. Sal and his colleagues at York XL understand that all neighborhoods need a bottom-up approach to investment, and in this episode, shares how you can lead a revolution in your own city or town, including how to share your vision with the neighborhoods in which you work, how to build trust with neighbors, and how to ensure your investment includes everyone in the neighborhood. Enjoy. Going on, friend? How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm recovering from an event that we just had here, but otherwise, really good day. Awesome day.
Awesome. I'm happy to hear it. I know we were chatting a little bit before we started the recording. It sounded like a really great event going down in York discussing unity. Is that correct? Bringing some unity among all the residents in York?
Yeah, so it was a year-long project that was started by friends of mine, actually, called Celebrating York's Unity Through 10,000 Acts of Kindness. And it culminated on Sunday with a kindness festival that had bands and performances and spoken word. There was a free dinner that was served to everybody. There was activities for kids, like a bounce house and paint, a face painting. There was free flavored ice, and it was there was also a community resource fair. So it was a really good time, and it was very diverse. And I think it just showed the progress that York has made York City and York County has made since the riots that a lot of cities are commemorating the 50th anniversary of different riots that happened throughout the country. One of them was here in York. But yeah, so it was a splendid day, really good weather. It only rained a little bit on Saturday while we were setting up the 650 tables and 5,000 chairs, but we knocked it out with a lot of help, particularly students from the high school where the event happened, like right in front of the high school. So it was really good to see them come out and support.
And Sal, I'll tell you what, in our pursuit of building stronger cities, towns, and neighborhoods, I think committing over 10,000 kind acts throughout the year is a pretty great way to start.
I appreciate it. I'm not going to take credit for it. I've been involved with it off and on, more off than on in the past year, but they brought me in as the project manager for the last, I guess, 5 or 6 weeks just to make sure that it happened smoothly, and it did, much to, I think, because they had done a very good job at planning it. But yeah, so tell you what, good time, inspiring.
That's wonderful, Sal. The topic we're going to discuss today, Sal, is how listeners can inspire grassroots community revitalization. And Sal, I know you've been at this for a bit now through your great organization out of York, Pennsylvania, called York XL. Sal, to get us started, for folk who are unfamiliar with York XL, I'd love to flash back to the early days, maybe even those few months before you started this organization. What were you observing in neighborhoods throughout York that inspired you to start York XL?
So the foundation story, right? The beginning story. One of the things that I guess on a personal level, what was happening with me is that I had finally found myself in a place where I could actually call home, where I was happily, I am, was then and am happily married. And now I have a son. And it's somewhere that I can call home. I'm 46 years old and I've lived in, I think, maybe 24 different buildings, different locations, I suppose, in my life. So I'm used to moving a lot. So now that I had a relatively stable life at that point, I guess I had been here for maybe 5 years. I thought, you know what, it's time to start using the skills that I have to lend a hand to other people, not to solve other people's problems, but to bring people together to work together to solve those problems. So that's what was going on personally. Now, from a professional standpoint, I was moving away from like a soul sucking job as a business analyst for a software mm-hmm. company, you know, like 9 to 5 in front of a computer talking tax software all day. And minimal connection, or actually no connection to the community, because our clients were in a different state. So I was transitioning into real estate, and I was just doing a lot of driving around and seeing the state of our neighborhoods here in the city, comparing them to other areas in the county that look totally different than the city. And at the same time, I was monitoring a lot of social media, and particularly one Facebook group here in York that has the reputation, I think, of being like the worst that social media can offer, but also the best that social media can offer. So you see a lot of people doing cool stuff, but then you also get the complainers, the trolls, etc. And what I noticed was a lot of people saying, hey, why isn't this being done? Or why isn't the mayor doing this? Or why isn't city council doing that? And I just kept on thinking to myself, it's like, you know what, it's not up to the mayor to do all of this. It's like that's not really what mayors do. You know, they lead, but they're not necessarily there to fix societal issues and fix individual neighborhoods per se. And it's also not up to city council. And my feeling always was, you know what, it's up to us to do it. No one else is responsible for it. So I went into said a forum and I said, hey, anybody interested in being more than just a talker, meet me at a particular coffee shop. I don't know if I can give them a shout out or not. You know what the heck? My ironic coffee shop in York is an absolutely fabulous place. It's a great third place, I guess, is yeah, the yeah. It's people that it's where you go to meet people that are doing things and get into conversations with people. There's a lot of art. There's a lot of sculpture and things, just inspiring things. Good food, good coffee as well. And I said, hey, you know what? On a particular Saturday back in 2017, I said, meet up on the second floor. Let's chat and see what kind of stuff we can do together. You never know how many people are going to show up. And I was pleasantly surprised to have 8 people there, 8 people that I had never met before. And unfortunately, we suffered what a lot of groups suffer at the very beginning. It's like you get together, you have ideas, and then you spend 6 months planning. And I got I get frustrated with that type of stuff. So I decided one time, I think it was that would have been in I think October, and then this would have been in May the following year, 2018. And I said, you know what, it's time to get something started. So I posted on Facebook and I said, you know what, I'm going to be at such and such an address at I forget what time it was, but if you're interested, come on out. We're going to do a guerrilla garden, meaning that we're going to go in and we're going to take care of these three big planters that are just a big eyesore on this street. And we had two people show up.
Someone to hold the flowers, someone to dig the sod. What else do you need?
So I went out and I got, I think, if I recall, I got some basil, some, was it marigolds maybe? Something else. And then I might have done tomato plants too. And we did those three. But the cool thing was that the fourth person that showed up was somebody from the local newspaper that then did pictures and did a small article. And of course, we took a lot of pictures and put it all over Facebook. And it just became popular. For some reason, people like gardening, you know? I think it just speaks to a lot of people because it's about food. It's about, making things pretty, and it's about getting your hands in the dirt, and it just speaks to people. And after that, we had somebody say, you know what, there's this space in my neighborhood that's a right of way. Nobody owns it. It's like a 40-foot path between the street and these big parking lots. It's got these two walls on the side. Do you want to? And it's covered with weeds and litter, et cetera. Do you want to come out and help us with that? And we said, sure. So we just made an event.
Suddenly a gardening expert, Sal.
So we got out there but even back then I was saying, you know what, it's not about the gardening. It's not about anything that we actually do. It's about getting people together to do those things. And it can't be just people from outside the neighborhood. I mean, you're not going to turn any help away, but it's got to be with people from that particular neighborhood. So I'm a procrastinator. So I found myself the day before we were going to do that particular guerrilla garden. And I'm going around, I think it was like maybe at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and it's raining. And I'm putting flyers under everybody's door. but it got done. But fortunately, the actual day of the event was absolutely beautiful. And I tell you sincerely, I think we had, I'm trying to remember, like maybe 30 people that came out. It was just amazing. And then the media came out and the local newspaper, a guy who was by then a friend of mine, did this Facebook Live thing, and he had like thousands of views on it. So it just got our name out there. And then we did a second one there to continue the progress, and we did a second garden in that location, like a half a block away, and we still had a lot of people coming. So at the end of the summer last year, we ended up having something called the end of the summer guerrilla garden party. And we got a DJ that donated his time, put up his stuff, was spinning tunes. We were grilling hot dogs and hamburgers, and again, we flyered, and at first it was just a little bit of people, but on a Friday night, people sit on their stoops, on their steps. So we just went up and said, mostly to the kids, like, hey, we have spray paint over here, because we had this wall, if I could describe it, has basically alternating squares, and every other one kind of juts out like maybe an inch or so. So it's kind of like it's got texture. So we had gotten spray paint, and then we just basically made some stencils out of a cardboard box.
Cool, man.
And then the kids were then just spray painting the wall. It wasn't the prettiest, And even some people involved with York Excel complain about it not looking very pretty. but I always have to remind people, it's like that's not the point. At least it wasn't the point at that time. At that time, it was about getting the kids out. And once the kids were out, then the adults came out. And then we ended up with a lot of people again, dozens of people out there. So it's sometimes I think people worry much more about the professionalism of the end product, whether it's a pretty garden or whether it's a pretty mural or artwork, when that's really not the point. The point is that you had a dozen kids out there spray painting. I'm talking like 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 8, 12, 13-year-olds, just a little bit of everybody.
So Sal, I want to talk a little bit more about how we build trust with these different neighborhoods that we work in. You know, I imagine many of our listeners, they've found their posse, they formed their group, they're starting to share their ideas and their visions with one another. But as you mentioned, what really matters is actually being on the ground in these neighborhoods, having meaningful conversations about people's hopes for their neighborhoods, people's dreams, struggles that they have in achieving those dreams. In your experience, what was it like starting to build that trust with different neighborhoods? Because I imagine it's challenging, you know, just to maybe knock on doors and throw down a flyer. How do we actually start to have these meaningful conversations?
What we decided was that the way that we were going to get to know people was by having continuous, meaningful engagements with people. And those lead to meaningful relationships that over time build trust. So how do you do that? I mean, the typical thing that you see here in New York, and you see it probably a lot of different places, is, you know, you organize a one-time event. We're going to go and pick up litter. We're going to go and we're going to clean up this park, or we're going to build a park. But then you leave, everybody goes home. And at the end of the day, you've built a park, but you really haven't built community. Because quite often what happens is that the people in the community watch you do whatever you're doing, and then they watch you leave. because they don't know who you are. They don't trust you. How do you get to know any person, right? Like if you're dating somebody, right? It's like you don't just go up to somebody and say, "Hey, let's get married." You got to get to know them. Sure. You go out and do this one thing together. You go out, like have a coffee. Go out and have a beer. Go to a baseball game or something, you know. Or hey, let's just take a walk. You spend time getting to know each other, and as you get to know each other, you are more honest about yourself. You're looking to know more about them and really understand who they are, to see if, hey, is this somebody that I'd like to like spend my life with, right? And it's the way that I see it is that any community development effort, you kind of have to go through that courting process.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, it's just two people just doing something, and then that's it. So what we decided to do is, and it took us a long time to come up with a name, because everybody kept saying, oh, it's a block party. So we decided that what we wanted to do was basically these events where we would set up our table, put up the York Excel banner, have face painting for kids, maybe have food here and there, depending on whether we can get away with it without having to get a permit, etc. And do some ready-made projects, like picking up litter or tree wells. There's a lot of tree wells in New York that aren't well maintained. So we decided just to just go ahead and do it. And we said, you know what? We're not going to take time to plan. We're not going to dissect this to death. We're just going to go out and do it. And we said we're going to do it 4 weeks in a row. So we went out one Saturday. We had. I think that Saturday we had 24 people, which was more than I actually really wanted, because I didn't want it to look like we were taking over the neighborhood. But it worked out just as fine. And the way we do it, basically we set up shop, which means like several tents and tables in an intersection of the city. This one happened to be at Princess and Pine. And we did our thing. We went around, we picked up a lot of litter. We weeded, I think it was 53 tree wells. One of our board members also works for the city, York City Bureau of Health, and her interest is a lot on walkability and things. So she went around and took pictures of all the tree wells, and we wanted to categorize them on like whether they have a tree or not, whether there's a grate there or not, whether there's a tripping hazard or not, so that we could come up with different things that we could do to the tree wells depending on what was needed. But at the same time, we also went around and we flyered again. We knocked on doors. If people were outside, we engaged them in conversation. And we weren't there to ask questions, but we did ask people to write down impressions after we were done and send them to me so that we had them. Because you don't want to go out and just immediately start asking questions, because then people start putting up, they put up a wall. It's like, well, wait a minute, who are you? Why are you here? But you know, the first time you don't get that much of a response from the neighborhood, but when you come out a second time, and then a third time, and then a fourth time, after a while, you know who the people in the neighborhood are. Maybe not all of them, but you start recognizing faces. A lot of times, you start recognizing names, and you can say hi to people. And then we took a little bit of a break. Then we came back and moved down a half a block, and we did four street meets there. So there was some cross-pollination of people, because some of it was part of the same block. But then we got to know a whole bunch of other people. And there we actually had the one story, which I think is probably a story we'll tell a lot. When we were going around and flyering the first time that we were going to do it for that second set of street meets, it was me and just so for the I guess for the audience, I'm Hispanic. I'm 46 years old. And I don't dress, I'm a realtor, but I don't dress as like a realtor. I wear shorts and t-shirts almost everywhere, even to meetings at the foundation. Maybe that's why I'm not getting funded. We're going around, and I'm going around with a Caucasian gentleman, right? And so we made an interesting pair walking around the neighborhood that's probably like 40% African American, 30% Latino, and then the rest Caucasian. But there was this one particular guy that was sitting outside on the step, and he just would not engage us. Tried to talk to him, and the first thing he said was, not interested. It's like, well, I'm not selling anything. It's like, nah, not interested. It's, we're going to be here. It's like, what? Nope, not interested. I don't know who you are. And so that's what it was. And you have to respect that.
Sure.
And so we went around and did that. So that was the that was just the flyering before the first street meet for that particular block. But tell you what, when we did the first street meet, he came over.
Love it.
And he was talking, and he stayed a little bit. He would leave and then come back and leave and come back. By the second street meet, he was there the entire time. He actually fell asleep on one of our chairs. And this is I would say he's probably in his 70s or 80s, African-American gentleman. And he let our staff person, or volunteer, really, she's a board member, because none of us gets paid for going out to do what we do. he let her do a rainbow on his arm.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so that was cool. And then by the fourth street meet, he was out there dancing because we take out music. We have these big speakers that we take out to pump music. He was just dancing along with everybody else and like obviously like cleaning litter and sweeping sidewalks and et cetera. But it's like, to me, that's the power of like really trying to get to know people.
Yes.
And now when we walk out there, he knows who we are. We're able to introduce ourselves, or we're able to talk to him by name. And then there's other people in the neighborhood that are starting projects because we're supporting them and giving them like the next steps. And like I said, that we don't go out saying, well, this is the solution to your issues. For us, it's okay. So what is it that you're trying to accomplish? And what resources are there already in the neighborhood and the community in York City? And what other resources and what other skills do we need to bring in? So that's the approach that we're taking. That's how we build trust. And we just recently started into the next set of 9 street meets that we're going to do in wow. this half a mile area of a street called Broad Street. It's an area called the Broad Street Greenway that should be a city asset, but it's not. I don't believe most people know that it's there. It's not even used that much by the neighborhood. And it's basically all these gardens that line about a half a mile of the street. It connects these two K-8 schools. And between the garden and the sidewalk, there's actually an area for walking and for biking. So, I mean, it's an actual space that you can be out there, like not on the street because you're protected by those gardens. And then the street is on the other side of those gardens. So we're going to be doing 9 street meets. We just did the first two on there, getting to know those people. But now that we've been out there and people know what we're doing, we're going to start asking questions. We're going to start asking, maybe having like 3 questions about, hey, how long have you lived here? How many places have you lived in the last 3 years? Are you planning to move in the coming year? So getting a sense of, we know that there's a big mobility issue here, transiency in our schools, for example. We're trying to figure out, okay, so how can we anticipate it? Trying to get not so much, okay, so we have a 40% transiency between the beginning of school and the end of school, but how many times did people move in between that time? So is it just twice? We believe that it's more than that, and we don't know why people are moving. We can guess, but we really don't know because we really haven't taken the time as organizations to get to know the residents. Like we always make these generalizations about people based on census data or based on this metadata, as if that metadata really defines the neighborhood or defines the individual. So for us, it's really about getting to know individuals. And coming up with a way for all of us to come together to really create community.
It's an insight that you won't get from a survey, only from actually being in the neighborhoods, conversing with folk and building that trust. And I love that story about the man that started as a skeptic gentleman on the porch to dancing at one of the street meets. And listeners, is just an excellent example of the difference between top-down planning, what we see in communities all across the country, compared to what we advocate for as strong towns, and that is a bottom-up revolution. You know, Sal gave this great example of discussing mobility, why there's a large percentage of this neighborhood very transient. Yeah, we can send out a survey, maybe gather some general statistics and try to make the best conclusion as we can without actually understanding the whole of a person. But whenever, like what Sal and his peers at York Excel are doing, we take a bottom-up approach, actually being in the neighborhoods, throwing these street meets, gathering all these extra anecdotes that you don't get from a survey. That's how we truly figure out what investments we can make in our communities, measure those investments, measure the effectiveness of them, and then go from there. I love it, Sal.
I appreciate it. Yeah, no, that was, you did a great job at summarizing that.
So you've thrown how many street meets now?
We just completed the 10th one. So you demonstrated and then you kind of talk to people. Like the next time that we're out there, we'll talk to people about what they thought about it, whether it's something that they like to see, and then showing them, if they don't know already, how it is that they could advocate for themselves to get something permanent done on the crosswalk. You got to have people with all different kinds of skills, all types of thinking, to come together and just say, hey, you know, let's work together on this. You guys always, the podcast, right? It's the small things. It's like, what's the smallest thing that we can do? Let's go out and pick up the trash. Now what? Okay, so now let's pull up all the weeds. Okay, so now what? Okay, let's paint the fences. Now what? It's like, well, we need Foursquare. We need things for kids. Let's do that. It's like, okay, now what? So just you keep on saying, okay, so what's the next thing? And before you know it, it's like you're transforming your neighborhood, and you're getting to know people. It's all those small things that are going to solve the issues that we have, the poverty issues, the hunger issues, the educational issues, the mobility issues. I think it's like getting to know people, getting to know what skills people have, and then just matching people up that have skills with the people that have priorities that match those skills.
Yes.
That's the way that I see it. That's in my mind, and I hate to be myopic or whatever the English word is, but I believe that that's really the only way to get past a lot of things. Because if you don't get the community to do it themselves, then there's no buy-in necessary. More likely, mm-hmm. there's no buy-in. And then if there's no buy-in and people are moving in and out, then you did one thing and it's probably not going to last.
That's right.
So for me, if you're going to have something that lasts, you got to include everybody in that community.
You're right, Sal, and include the people who are the experts in where they live. You know, all of these top-down programs are sexy. They look good. Maybe they have a nice tagline and promise to track certain kinds of outcomes. But if we're missing out and actually having conversations with people who are experts in their communities, actually know best where they struggle and know their dreams best, we're not actually going to make the meaningful neighborhood investments that we need. And from everything that you've described, whether it's the Spanish classes, the grant writing classes, all the great tactical urbanism and guerrilla gardening you've done, in the words of Strongtown Sioux Falls, which is a great local conversation of ours, you know, what they always say is that our goal is to give people like permission to take action. And, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily need permission, but, you know, just to empower them and educate them and have them know that, you know, oh, I can act on my ideas. Like I can actively shape where I live. And that's something that you guys over at York Excel are doing an excellent job of, Sal.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. If I can add just one thing to that as well,
please.
Is like sometimes, one of the things that I hear about from a lot of people is like, well, you know what? They're walking by that litter every day. Why aren't they picking it up? Or why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? And that kind of goes back to the thing that you said. They're the ones that are experts in their community. And they're the ones that are experts in their life experience.
Right.
So quite often I talk about not so much needs, but more about priorities. Because quite often you can go in and it's like, yeah, you can probably figure out that people need more money. Probably in order to get more money, they need better jobs. In order to get better jobs, they need more skills. In order to get more skill, or in order to get to a job, they need transportation. They need to eat. So we kind of figure out the things that you kind of need in order to have the basic networks and the structures that to have a successful life. But what we don't know is of all of those things, what's the most important thing for you, for that person?
Sal, I love that. If I don't have, I maybe don't have the energy to pick up a piece of trash whenever I'm walking 10 miles to the grocery store.
Because that's not what you're thinking about.
That's right.
So
that's a great
point. It's like, well, why do they, they must like living in an ugly neighborhood. It's like, well, you know what? It's like, if every single day you wake up and you have to figure out how you're going to get to work, or if you have a job, you know, how you're going to feed your children, how you're going to pay the rent. So it's like, so yeah, you know what? If somebody is living in a neighborhood and there's weeds everywhere, my guess is that it's not because they don't see it and they don't want for the neighborhood to look better. It's just, it's the furthest thing from their mind. And yes. I think that's the part that we miss. It's like, so when we go out and we say, look, we made your neighborhood look pretty for you. Why don't you appreciate us? It wasn't a concern for them. It's like, they're still dealing with the same stuff, because you really didn't really come in and do anything. You came in and that's made right. something look better so that you feel better about it. So like when you're driving by, you say, oh, look, that's pretty. But you really didn't help the neighborhood. Yes. And the only way to help neighborhoods, in my opinion, is by empowering people to do for themselves.
Listeners, whether you are a community advocate or an elected official, planner, whatever your background is, if you are inspired by Sal's story and want to start making investments like York Excel has, really understanding the whole person in the neighborhood and what their struggles are, what their dreams are, what their priorities are, above all, not so much just purely what you believe their needs are, we have good news. You don't have to waste time creating a 5-point plan, a 12-question survey. All you have to do is go into these neighborhoods, build that trust, as you know, Sal's done a great job talking about, you know, throw an event, invite people to participate, start having these conversations. And I'll tell you what, you know, Sal mentioned, you know, priorities, you know, I don't necessarily have, you know, the capacity to consider picking up weeds or picking up trash whenever it's a hard time for me just to get the day's needs. As you start to have these conversations with people, these kinds of struggles and these kinds of conversations are going to come up naturally. Don't think that you need to dig too deep. Once we start building that trust, people are going to willingly and joyfully share where they struggle and what their priorities are. And what a great way to help you guide whatever your investments are for the neighborhood. And if you want to look more into this, there's a great resource at Strong Towns called the Neighborhood's First Report. And I'll make sure to include this in the show notes. And it just does a great job of, you know, complementing what Sal's been talking about. You want to make neighborhood investments and actually address the root of the problem. As Sal mentioned, this is very complex. You know, a silver bullet program likely won't fix a lot of the issues that we see in neighborhoods. But through Neighborhood's First Report, you can figure out, you know, what are those first investments that we need to take. Throw a street mix or what was it one
street
more time,
meat.
Sal?
Street meat.
Throw a street meat. And I think you'll be well on your way to better understand your neighbors and what their priorities
are. Don't make it complicated. Just get a table, get some chairs, just go out and, I don't know, have some paper and crayons, whatever. I mean, we have paper and crayons and colored pencils and paint, and just go out and attract the kids. And you got them, because, you know, it's actually the kids that are going to, in my opinion, because they're the ones that that have to see themselves living there. I believe that they're going to be the ones that are really the problem solvers in our neighborhoods.
Beautiful. Well, Sal, this has been an absolute joy. I appreciate sharing your expertise and experience with us. You've done some great work in York, the York Excel. Hopefully other folk are inspired to pursue something similar as well, because it's very important that we have more of these, you know, neighborhood-led investments in communities all across the country. If anyone wants to connect with you, learn more about the great work you're doing at York Excel, where can people connect with you online?
Online, it's yorkexcel.com, and that's YORK, and then the letter X, the letter L.com. That's a play on the extra large type of thing. And so it's not just the city, it's all of us together. And beautiful. Also excelling, you know, XL. So YORKXL.com.
Beautiful. Well, Sal, thank you again, friend. This has been a joy. We'll chat very soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.